This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 3, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, said, "Food is essential to life. Therefore, make it good." If anyone questions whether he meant what he said, I urge you to go to Chick-fil-A. It's only about 7 miles from here tonight and order a number one deluxe with pepper jack cheese, no pickles. And you will find out that he meant what he said. Leadership also is an essential part of society and life. And we may as well do the best we can with it, just like Truett Cathy did with the chicken sandwich. If we are going to be leaders, we may as well do the best that we can. I'm excited about this topic, not because I have achieved the status indicated in the title, but because of the truths that have become clearer to me as I studied and prepared for this topic. I wonder how many of you decided that you are going to be a leader. Probably for most of you, you didn't really make that conscious decision, but here you are today, and you find that, yes, you are in a leadership role. And maybe for the few that aren't, you're going to find yourself there someday, more than likely. A lot of times, it kind of happens by default. We have an idea, we start a business, maybe Dad started a business, and we look up and we're responsible to lead people. That's often the way it happens. As leaders, I am urging you to not bury your talents, but do the best you can with what God has given you. We're going to be looking at some general principles, but then there are also some very specific things that I'd like to talk about. There are several different styles of leadership. There's a spectrum, and we've got a lot of different leaders here today. On the one hand, on the one end of the spectrum, we have leaders who maybe index on courageous and confident leadership. Words like decisive and clear direction, in charge, visionary, energized, a man of action might go with courageous and confident leadership. On the other end of that spectrum, we have the humble and curious type of leadership. Words that go with that might be collaborate, consensus, counsel, understanding, even gentle. Now, take just a little bit of time and try to figure out, where do you fit in that spectrum? Are you about in the middle, or maybe you index fairly heavily on one or the other? Which is best? Maybe we could ask ourselves that. Is it better to be gentle and understanding as we lead people, or is the need to be decisive and a man of action? Well, the truth is that we need a combination of all of those traits. The best leaders exercise all of them. And I feel like Shane explained that fairly well in his topic. We should take a look at our style of leadership and be open to the possibility that maybe we need to make some adjustments to be the best leader that we can be. Jim Collins, in his book, Good to Great, addresses this He talks about it, I think it's in about chapter 2 or so, level 5 leadership, and this is what he says. The most effective leaders are very modest, humble, but have a ferocious will. In other words, they're not pushovers. They lead with a paradoxical blend of personal humility and professional will. So I think it's important that we don't just index on one style or the other, but we try to combine those. In 1995, a man by the name of Daniel Goleman wrote a book titled Emotional Intelligence, Why It Matters More Than IQ. Now, before that, IQ was seen as something very important. How much brain power do we have? How quickly can we pick up on a concept? That's IQ. And at some point, employers actually used to give employees IQ tests to kind of see how smart someone is. I don't know if that happens today. I don't think it does. I haven't heard of that in a long time. But there was a shift in the 90s, and part of it had to do with this book that Daniel Goleman wrote. And basically, the idea of EQ came up, this concept of EQ. And what EQ is, it stands for emotional intelligence. And basically, what that means is, well, the definition of emotional intelligence is understanding and managing your own emotions and understanding the feelings of others. That is EQ. And what was discovered was that how smart someone is actually not that important in how successful they are. But what was really an indicator of success was their level of EQ, how well they understood themselves and their emotions and what they were feeling, and understanding other people. It reminds me of the story of Solomon when he was asked what he wants, and he asked for an understanding heart. And God was pleased with that. So having a high EQ, or being able to control your own emotions, not get upset and angry and impatient with other people, and then also understanding the feelings of someone else, is actually where it's at. And so we as leaders should strive to develop EQ. It's just an interesting little note is IQ is something kind of like your nose. You can't do much about it. The shape and the size of your nose is kind of what you got. You're stuck with it, okay? IQ is a little bit the same way. You can't just decide, I'm going to get smarter. Now, you can gain knowledge, but IQ has to do with how quickly you can pick up on a concept. What you got is kind of what you got, okay? The average IQ of an American man, I think, is around 100. And so you can't just decide, I'd like to have an IQ of 125. Doesn't really work that way. Now, EQ, however, is different. It's a part of the brain that is considered to be plastic or malleable. It can change. And you can have a low EQ where you get upset with people and you just can't quite control your own emotions and you don't understand other people. The good news is that that is something that can be developed. And as I see it, it dovetails so nicely with what the scriptures teach about the fruit of the Spirit and growing in grace and increasing our growth. Christian growth is really at what I see here. The fruit of the Spirit, by the way, is something that mostly is something that we relate to toward other people. Love, joy. Did you know that joy greatly affects other people? It's not just about you, but the joy that you have is something that helps other people in life. And we could go over this list. We're going to be talking about three of them specifically as it relates to leadership and being the kind of leader that is worth following. A key component to emotional intelligence is empathy. Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. Now, probably all of us have experienced feeling misunderstood. That is one of the hardest things to deal with, is when we know that someone is not understanding what I'm feeling. That's hard to deal with. Now, when you as an employer, when you can understand the feelings of your employees or other people, that is powerful. That simple ability will give you such an edge, it's unbelievable. Understanding the feelings of another is empathy. Now, Shane explained that you don't have to agree with the way they're feeling, but to just validate and say, yes, I hear what you're saying, I even understand what you're saying, then they can hear you when you say, but there's another side to this thing I'd like for you to also consider. So empathy is a very important part of emotional intelligence. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Now, just a little caution to this whole thing. There is such a thing as, I think I can say this, toxic empathy, where people have feelings and they really need to be helped to get past them, but instead of helping them get past them, you just pity them. That's a little trap that maybe people that have the gift of mercy can fall into, or be careful about toxic empathy. When you're relating to someone who is facing a challenge, it is generally better to encourage him or her than to pity them. It's amazing what people can work through with just a little bit of encouragement. So let's guard against toxic empathy. Another trait that leaders should have is the quality of meekness. We lived in Kenya for 6.5 years, and while we were there, we had the privilege of going to the Mara, which is a large park, the size of some of our smaller states. And there they had the giraffe and the elephants and the lions and the cheetahs and wildebeest and zebras, and a lot more too. But one of the very interesting animals to watch was the zebra. They looked so much like a horse with stripes, shaped like them, they ran like them. And I looked at those zebras and I thought, what? Why are those zebras? They're out there by the hundred. It's a shame that we can't harness that energy and use them like we use horses. Well, there's a reason for that. They can't be harnessed. A zebra cannot be broken like a horse. And now, they spend their days eating grass and running around and reproducing, and now they can kick like crazy. If a well-placed kick by a zebra can disable a lion. So they can kick, they can run, but beside that, they're nice to look at. They're flashy. A horse, on the other hand, by the way, a horse genetically is basically same as a zebra. They can interbreed. You can have a zebroid. They're very close to same. But the main difference between a horse and a zebra is that a horse, you can harness the power that is in a horse and makes them very, very useful. We don't use them so much nowadays, but back in the day, man would have just had a very difficult time surviving without horses. Now, we as leaders, we are kind of like that. We've got zebra in us, but we have the ability to be harnessed. And meekness is when we have our strength, we let it be harnessed, and we let it be under the control of the Holy Spirit. That is meekness. It's a wonderful quality and essential for leaders to have. Did you know that the strengths or the gifts that you have can be used in ways that God did not intend? Studying the spiritual gifts, I was surprised to discover that some of those gifts that God give us can actually be very damaging. So let's be very careful that we are not like the zebra. Another very important thing is self-control. That was mentioned also. A leader of others must first lead himself. When we have self-control, it invokes trust and credibility from others. These are key components in our ability to lead. I'd like to talk next about one of my favorite characters in the Bible, a man called Nehemiah. And there was a trait that he displayed that we sometimes don't think about too much as it relates to leadership. But I feel like Nehemiah had this, and it expanded his capacity to motivate and to lead, and that is the quality of joy. Nehemiah, I believe, was a joyful, upbeat, optimistic, and happy person. The reason I believe this is because the king noticed when he was sad, okay? It says there that the king noticed that he was sad. If he would have had a long face all the time, it wouldn't have been worth mentioning. That would have just been the norm. Also, after the wall was built, they called the people together and they read from the law, and the people recognized that they had sinned and they mourned. They cried. It sounded like quite an affair. They were crying. And I'm not sure how long it was. I think it was half a day or a day, and then Nehemiah got up and he addressed the people and he said, "Listen, stop crying. We're going to have a feast. Go bring the food." He said, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." So I think Nehemiah understood that sadness, there's a time for it, but this is not the way we operate normally. Joy is where it's at. The other thing that makes me pretty sure that Nehemiah was a joyful person was the way he could motivate people. First of all, he motivated the king, and the king let him do whatever he wanted to. That doesn't happen to people with long faces. And then he eventually ended up in Jerusalem, called a meeting with the people, and I think at that meeting, when he called the people together, he didn't say, "Wall's broken down. How many of you would be willing to help? We need volunteers. Got any hands?" No. He said, "Listen, this is our city. I'm here, and I believe God wants us to build this city up again. The bad news is that it's a mess, but the good news is that the stones are right here. The layout of the wall is right there. The footer is still in. All we have to do is rearrange the stones and throw some mortar in. And if we work together, I think we can do it in 2 months. And if we really work, maybe a little bit less than that." How many of you are in? He was energized at joyfulness motivates people. And as leaders, that is something that we should cultivate. The people had a mind to work, and in 52 days, I wish I could have been there. That would have just been an absolute joy to watch. 52 days, they built the walls up all the way around that city. An affirming, joyful leader motivates. The other side is also true. A grouchy, grumpy leader demoralizes. Now, a first cousin to joy is something called humor. Humor is a tool that can be used to your advantage. Abraham Lincoln used humor to his advantage. Ronald Reagan used humor to... I love the story of Ronald Reagan. He was a pretty old man. I think he was running for his second term. And people were asking, is he really old? Is he really going to run? He's too old. He was falling asleep at some meetings. And so when he had a debate with, I forget who it was, the moderator asked Reagan, kind of put him on the spot. He said, what do you think age will have to do with this election? And Reagan quips, well, he refuses for political purposes to exploit his opponent's youth and inexperience. He just used humor to diffuse the situation. And when you're in a meeting and things get a little bit tense, if you can throw just a little bit of humor in, it has a way of just greasing the gears. So cultivate that. Analyze yourself and ask yourself the question, should I lighten up a little bit? Another first cousin to joy is optimism. Now, is there such a thing as a pessimistic leader? Maybe there is, but to me there seems to be an incongruity there, a pessimistic leader. If we're pessimistic, let's take a good look at that. And I have a story that kind of illustrates this. A friend of mine, good friend of mine, he is a self-proclaimed pessimist. And I worked with him there at Faith Mission Home, and we had a very large sycamore tree that was leaning toward our girl staff house. And girl staff house was over here, and it was leaning this way. And what, after a windstorm, one of our staff fellows said, he thinks that tree is leaning further than it was. And at the same time, a neighbor told me, sycamore trees have weak root systems. And I got my friend into my office. He was our building and grounds supervisor. And I said, this tree's coming down this week. Oh, he said, that's a huge tree. Are we going to do that? Yeah, I said, we can do that. We'll get our little logging winch on the back of a three-point hitch, and we'll go up there, and we'll tie it up as high as we can, and we'll pull that tree over center and out into the pasture away from the girls' staff house. Oh, I don't know about that. I said, yeah, we can do this. I knew that his tendency is toward pessimism, and I said, we can do this. And said, I'll do the cutting. I had experience in felling trees, and he wasn't excited about it. He didn't think we should try it. I said, yeah, let's try it. So Thursday morning, we decided on Thursday morning, and we got out there with the chainsaw and the equipment, and we had our little logging winch and had a half-inch cable, and we used our tallest ladder to go as high as we could, and then a couple, tree steps that hunters used. We went up a little higher, tied the cable around the tree as high as we could, took it out, took the tractor out into the field. I think the tree was 100 feet tall, and it was huge. Some of the limbs on it were as big as trees. And then I got busy, cut the notch, and then I made a plunge cut on the backside of the notch, and I worked my way around till I was halfway through, and then my bar got stuck. What's going on here? So I motioned out to my pessimist friend. I said, put a little more tension on the tree. So he did. And to my horror, the cable snapped. And here we had a tree that was probably over halfway cut through at the base, and the cable snapped. Anyway, we got busy, fixed the cable, got a bow and arrow, shot a rope up over a branch, pulled another bigger rope up, pulled the cable back up, wrapped it around, and put tension on the tree again. By this time, most of campus was out there watching, and the pressure was on. Finally, we got the bar unstuck, and he pulled again, put good pressure on it, and I finished cutting, and I worked my way around. Now, when I had made the plunge cut on the right side, I left a substantial hinge, like 6 inches. By the way, this tree was 48 inches in diameter. It was huge. And so I left a substantial hinge because I can always go back and relieve that if I need to. Came around the far side. By that time, I was tuckered out. I was stressed out. And I actually, when I looked at how I had cut it, I realized like that hinge was maybe a little less than I wanted. And I forgot that I had left the hinge real thick on the far side. And so I got out of the way, pulled the chainsaw out, and I motioned out. I said, "Go ahead, pull it." Everybody was watching. And at that point, I knew that if this tree falls the opposite way from what I want it to, we're fixing the girls' staff house. We're going to have a big bill on our hands. But I didn't know what else to do. So he pulled, and to my horror, the cable snapped again. And that tree went, swayed toward the girls' staff house. And I just thought, is it going to hold? And it held. And then it swayed back again, away from the girls' staff house. And then it came back the second time, and this time it snapped with a loud crack, and that tree went down in a storm of leaves, and it took two other pretty good-sized trees with it, and the pieces flew. But when the dust settled, I realized it had missed the girls' staff house. Narrowly missed it. It just, instead of going straight toward the girls' staff house, it went at about a 45-degree angle. It just missed it. And I had no idea why it did that. By that time, it was 2:30 in the afternoon. We went in, ate lunch, came back out, looked at the stump, and I realized that the way I had cut that thing, by accident, I didn't know how to do that, made that tree twist away, and it missed the girls' staff house completely. Now, we had had a prayer that morning. I was actually pretty worried about it, and maybe a little more worried because my pessimistic friend was not feeling good about this. And so we prayed about it. We committed the project to the Lord, and it all turned out good. Now, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't try it again. But my optimism led me to try that, and it all turned out good. Now, I like to tell that story, and I like to see how people respond. Because some people say, that's a great story. But then there's some that are maybe a little more pessimistic and say, that was crazy. The point I would like to make is I think that in general, we as leaders should be optimistic. The Bible says, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. Now, I'm not promoting the idea that you're stupid about things. But in a general sense, I believe you're a more effective leader if you are generally optimistic. Henry Ford said, "Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you are right." I think of Nehemiah. I think he was an optimist. He thought he could. They built the wall against great odds. We're going to have to hurry here. I heard someone saying one time, if there would be an 11th commandment, he thinks it would be thou balanced. As leaders, I think it's important that we are balanced. It is difficult to respect a leader who is not balanced. Philippians 4:5 says, "Let your moderation be known unto all men." Melvin Layman said that a leader loses the privilege to speak rashly and recklessly. As leaders, we have to be careful about our speech. Overstating a point does not invoke trust. Off-color jokes should be off-limits. Be balanced in your beliefs. Be careful about what you believe. We must have a filter. There are so many ideas floating around out there, and some of them are crazy. So if we start believing things that are not true, somehow it is hard for the people that we are leading to trust us. Discerning leaders believe only half of what they hear. They also know which half to believe. Be especially cautious about conspiracy theories and personal convictions. I remember hearing about conspiracy theories when I was growing up, but man, you hear about them all the time. And I kind of think maybe we as leaders should be pushing back on that a little bit. Conspiracy theories make people fearful. And by the way, a theory is not a proven fact. It's a supposition. And so, yeah, let's be careful about conspiracy theories. And we are in a position as leaders that we can help people through this. So do that. Personal convictions. Now, have personal convictions, okay? But be a little bit careful with them. I have some convictions that probably not everybody in this room shares. If God leads you to believe a certain way about something, live it out. If somebody asks you about it, be free to talk about it, but don't force your personal convictions onto everyone else. I think we should be careful with that. Addressing problems. Do you enjoy problems? A lot of times we kind of think we don't, but I think we are built to actually address problems. If you could be relieved of any problems for the rest of your life, I think we would atrophy. What did God do when he created Adam? First assignment was he handed him a set of problems. The other night, we had a school event, and for one of the things the one booth had us do was come up with four names for animals, that just a fictitious name. Wow, that took some brain power. And Adam had to name all of the elephants, all of the animals, including elephants. How did he come up with that name? I believe we are actually made to solve problems. Merle Burkholder said, leaders eat problems for breakfast, lunch, and supper. And sometimes we get tired of them. But Paul told Timothy, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Let's be careful about our attitude toward the problems that come up. And that's a part of leadership. Be okay with your role as a chief problem solver. And I totally agree with what Shane said. We don't have to solve all the problems ourselves. But as leaders, many, many problems do come back to us. Joseph Grenny, in his book, Crucial Conversations, says the health of an organization can be measured by the lag time between when problems are discovered and when they are resolved. It is very tempting to kick the can down the road, and that's especially true for most of us when we are dealing with people problems. When I have somebody coming into my office and I detect that they have a problem that they want to present, sometimes they'll start out with, okay, I got bad news. I have discovered that I feel a sense of relief when I discover that it's not a people problem. Okay, those are the hard ones. But we should not develop a too negative a feeling toward problems, and the quicker we can take care of it, the better. The mode of operating for some leaders is to just push it down the road, hope it goes away. Guess what? Rarely does. Instead, it tends to get bigger. That was also already mentioned today several times. If there is a problem, those who you're leading are looking to you for a resolution. By the way, there was a study done on people who are willing to deal with people problems. And there were two fairly simple things that made people be seen as superstars in relating to conflict and people problems. One of them was having the courage to talk about it. Just having the guts to tackle it, okay? So many people simply don't have the courage to talk about it. The second one was to be able to talk about it and keep the emotions low key. If you can remember those two things, you're good at it. Preventive maintenance. That's something we leaders should be looking at. It's much better to keep a problem from happening than to have to correct it after they occur. Several things I just want to mention as it relates to people addressing problem or preventive maintenance. We have a no gossip policy at Faith Mission Home. I feel like that has been helpful in preventing problems. That doesn't mean that nobody ever gossips, but it's something we can point to. We talk about it at orientation. I feel like it helps. No gossip policy. Relationship building. Tyler just talked about that. Onboarding. Clearly explaining what the expectations are with roles and rules. I'd like to talk about decision making. I have a hypothetical situation. Every year at Faith Mission Home in April, we have Camp Week. 20 young people come, 10 young men, 10 young ladies, they clean campus. Thursday evening is a village cookout, and we have the ball game of the year. And I want you as leaders to put yourself in the shoes of the umpire. And here's the scenario. The big ball game of the year, and it's the camper fellas against the staff fellas. It's a hard-fought ball game. Bottom of the ninth, score is tied at 11. The campers are batting. They have the last at-bat. There are two outs. Nobody's on base. Randy steps up to the plate. It's full count. Three balls and two strikes. The pitch comes in, and Randy takes it. It's a line drive, well placed between left and center field. The center fielder chases after the ball, gets to it just as Randy is rounding second base. The third base coach is motioning him home. It's going to be a close play at home plate. Both sides are cheering wildly. If Randy makes it home, ball game's over, campers won. As he rounds third base and is almost at home, the shortstop gets a hold of the ball and he makes a perfect throw to the catcher. Randy slides into home plate. And from your perspective as an umpire, the catcher brushes his leg just as his foot touches the base. But you're not sure. Both sides are cheering wildly, and the catcher is lifting his glove into the air because he's sure that he got him. And Randy is clapping his hands because he's sure that he made it. The pressure's on. What do you do as the ump? You really aren't sure what the call should be. A, you decide that you'll never ump another game of softball. B, just throw your hands up and say, I don't know, because that's the truth. You don't know. Or maybe you could go out and have a huddle with the pitcher and ask him what he thinks it was. Let him do the dirty work. That's option C. Or you could just say, look, I didn't ask to be the umpire. I'm not going to make the call. It's too sticky. End the game. Go home. Neither one of those are very good options. That's kind of where we find ourselves sometimes. We simply don't know what to do. And I have maybe just a few ideas to share. Not necessarily when you're umping, but when you just go ahead and make the call. I would say it's close enough, tie means it's safe. The camper's won, okay? So let's leave that. But the difficult situations that you are facing and you simply don't know what to do, but somebody has to make a decision. Pray for wisdom. That is a very important thing. Pray for wisdom. God will give you wisdom. Sometimes it's not instantaneous, but eventually I believe there is an answer there. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Now, how do we get wisdom? Gather pertinent information. The more information you can get for a difficult situation, the better. Sort out the chaff. And what I mean by chaff is information that doesn't really matter. The fact that Randy is your nephew doesn't matter in this case, okay? Sort out the impertinent information. Get counsel from other people. It helps to talk about it. Sometimes when I'm in a difficult situation, it just helps to hear myself verbalizing, and it sorts things out in your mind. And then there are ideas that come. Consider if there's a third option. Sometimes if you're looking at A or B, there is another option. Discuss it with your spouse. Intuition is something. I think God can use intuition. And sometimes if you don't have to make a decision right there, give it a couple days. So those are some ideas as it relates to decision making. When the time is right, be decisive. Sometimes we just have to make the call. Be decisive, and when you make the call, embrace it. Robinson, in his book, Decisions by the Book, it's an easy read, paperback. He says, a second best decision diligently pursued will often beat a first best decision that is not diligently pursued. So embrace the decision. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't learn from it, but don't overanalyze all of your decisions. It's a waste of time, generally speaking. The last point I'd like to make is that leaders are readers. When I discipline myself to read books, it is such a rich experience. Now, I don't do as much as I should, but I would like to encourage you to read. Reading expands your horizons, it stimulates your brain, it gives you ideas, it is a teaching tool for yourself, and much more. You can learn so much from reading books. And so read, be a reader. And may God bless you as you strive to be the best leader that you can possibly be.